Welcome to Bayside Community Church Sermon Audio. We are a community of God's people falling in grace to talk and walk like Jesus. We hope that you find the truth you are looking for and the comfort needed in God's Word from this sermon so that you may follow God's will for your life and be more like Jesus. Now here's Sunday's sermon.
Imagine being so down on your luck that you had to sell your dog just to make ends meet. Before winning 3 out of 9 Oscar nominations and writing the Rocky script in days, Sylvester Stallone did just that. When offered $360,000 for the script with the condition that he would not be playing Rocky, Stallone stood firm even when he had only $106 in the bank. Therefore, he declined the offer. After standing firm on playing Rocky Balboa, the producers finally gave in and agreed to Stallone and gave him a measly $1 million budget. Stallone, defying the odds, pulled it off under the budget with the help of his friends and family to make the movie. After selling the script of one of the greatest rags-to-riches American dream stories ever told, Stallone bought his dog back for $15,000. All in all, this brings a whole new meaning to the term underdog. Stallone's persistence and determination paid off. We can't help but love a good underdog story. Whether in movies, business, and life, we love these type of stories. Before J.K. Rowling became the first author to earn a net worth of $1 billion, her Harry Potter pitch was rejected 12 times. Born into poverty, Oprah Winfrey became the first African-American billionaire in 2003. Without ever declaring bankruptcy, unlike its U.S. competitors, barely 2 decades old, Tesla surpassed General Motors as the most valuable U.S. automaker. Everyone loves a good underdog story. It strikes a chord deep within ourselves. It makes us feel like something has gone right in the world. Ah, yes. The little guy. Ah, yes, the overlooked. Ah, yes, the impoverished. Finally gets the win. Whether it's incorporated in story, marketing, or an attitude, the underdog motif has become an effective tool in shaping our perception. We love the stories of humble beginnings because we're drawn to them. We want that for ourselves. The underdog story is one of the most classic storylines with a universal appeal that drives feelings of empathy. They tap into the qualities we like best about ourselves and find most admirable in others. We love underdog stories because we feel they need us. It creates that gravitational bond between us and the underdog because we feel that we are valuable contributors to society. Studies have shown that the literal act of witnessing an underdog story gives us hope. If we walk out of a cinema watching classic underdog stories like Rocky, The Karate Kid, or The Pursuit of Happiness, the impact of experiencing the protagonist's ascendance fills us with a newfound sense of hope, meaning, and bravery. Studies have shown that this feeling can change the course of your life. Because you saw that movie, you read that book, you spoke to this important person, afterwards you were changed forever. You were motivated. You made a whole life change from hearing the underdog story. This is what makes our scripture reading today so powerful and popular. It is the original underdog story. I'm sure this is not the first time hearing the story of good David and Goliath. David and Goliath is told to children at church as the greatest Sunday school story ever told, and for good reason. God chooses David, the smallest and youngest of his family, to defeat a giant and win a battle for God's people. I mean, who doesn't love that story? What kid doesn't go, yeah, hoorah, hoorah, wishing, thinking they were little David? This story is perfect for young kids who can learn that God uses even the smallest of people for his purpose. It's a simple moral lesson of, if you trust God, like David, he will use you to take down the nasty, scary giants in your life. Therefore, be brave. Have faith. and let God use you and your slingshot. Modern society secularizes the story as a metaphor in situations like a small business successfully standing up to a big corporation or someone in town fighting the city hall. Even in church, we hear sermons all the time on how we can become David in fighting our Goliaths. But this morning, what if I told you that the David and Goliath story is not really about the underdog inside you, but about your cowardly dog that shows itself in the face of difficulty? What if I told you this story should really be titled Saul and Goliath, not David and Goliath? What if I told you that the story version of the underdog is a varnished knockoff of the real thing? It's the Mr. Pip to Dr. Pepper, the Tutti Frutti's to Fruit Loops, the Disney Pocahontas movie compared to the actual story of Princess Motaka. That's her real name. What if I told you we have misinterpreted the real meaning of the story? The underdog motif has skewed our reading of Bible stories, projecting unneeded heroism into the story. The problem, of course, with the underdog moral interpretation is it makes you the hero of the story, and God is your sidekick. You're the overlooked candidate who is now able to fight against your fears. You now have the chance to show everyone how awesome you are with your shepherd skills and slingshot accuracy. Everyone doubted you and belittled you, but now others will know how valuable you are to your community. But this is not the author's intent in writing the story. He's not trying to pick up our low self-esteem and make us feel good. He's not trying to produce an inspiring story for Hollywood. Rather, he wants us to be provoked to be who we are that God called us to be and to obey God with whatever difficulty we face. I'll say it this way and bluntly. You are not God's anointed one to rule Israel. You're not David this morning. So stop thinking that way right now. A foreign power is not threatening your family's existence and disrespecting your God and religion. This view removes God's power and purpose in the story and inserts your ego and superficial insecurities. You are Saul in the story. That's who we are. You're Saul. As king, Saul represents Israel in the narrative, a people who bumble towards faith and continually fall on their faces, needing God's intervention. If we think we are David, we miss the complete point of the story. We've assumed the story is supposed to teach us that anyone, no matter how small or weak, can defeat a giant. Although this is heartwarming, we've described it all wrong. Maybe it's because we want the story to appeal to children. Maybe it's because we really love a good underdog story. But whatever the reason, we've been telling the story incorrectly. If you only read this chapter 17, there was no other chapters of this book, then maybe you could land on that being the correct interpretation and application. But this is not an isolated story. This is a song note in a masterful theological symphony of Israel's history. There is much more before and after chapter 17 that helps us understand the meaning and purpose of this story. When we start from chapter 1 of 1 Samuel instead of chapter 17, verse 1, then we discover the greatest Sunday school story never told, which is Saul and Goliath, not David and Goliath. This is about Saul and his kingship, and how he fails to be a king. You see, the previous chapters of the book and onward, the author highlights Saul's life contrasted compared to David. David does this, and Saul doesn't do this. Samuel, through the people, chose Saul. That was a bad choice he made. That's last week's sermon. We don't choose well. But God chooses correctly. He chose David. And this is the compare and contrasting all throughout the book. Saul made so many mistakes, and evidence of this complete failure is this story before us, confronting Goliath, the Philistine. And this is the problem. He doesn't confront him. He's hiding in the back. Like, I'm going to be way my palace up high, protected, and just not deal with the problem of the Philistine. See how he's not a good king. Saul panics. Saul procrastinates, and he passes the buck to someone else to do the job. He fails to be the brave, strong king for Israel, which he was anointed for. He was anointed as well. Let's not forget that. It wasn't just David. Saul was anointed. God's power in his life. And he fails. But then this is when David jumps into the story. He rolls right into the narrative. God has a solution to Saul's failure as a leader. It's David. It's not Saul himself, or it's not us. The application from this correct interpretation is we can defeat any giant in our way if we don't panic, don't procrastinate, and if we don't pass the buck. The lesson is if a young, small, inexperienced country boy like David can be used by God to take down a giant, then surely you also can be used by God, no matter how many issues, failures, or sins you may be struggling with. Saul had poor faith. He failed God in the previous chapter. Yet, God has called him to be king, to win battles and protect his people, and he can't even do that. The truth of the story is being Saul, as God called him to be, was enough. Thus, it should be enough for us too, and who we are as Christians. So what Saul does is gives us a bad example of what not to do. And if we're honest with ourselves, we are more like Saul and we are not David. Let's not panic like Saul does in our lives. Verse 11. Verse 11 says, he and all the people, Israel, was afraid, terrified. Saul fails by panicking instead of believing in God. The reason why you fear is you have chosen to only see what is in front of you rather what is unseen. That's why you as a Christian fear. David, on the other hand, didn't just see Goliath in front of him. He saw him defeated way before he stepped on the battlefield. Before he even got into the ring, ding, ding, he knew he was victorious. How can you have that power, David? It's called faith, believing in God, not in your own strength, not in your slingshot ability. No, no, it's believing in God. He believed God would help him and be with him in facing this threat because faith calls us to see the unseen and impossible. Fear is the soul's cheap defense mechanism. It may keep you busy in your mind, but it crumbles you with its anxieties. But we must not panic, but believe that God will be with us. As Jesus says to the church, let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. Secondly, let's not be like Saul and procrastinate. This could be a bad habit for some people in here that can lead to spiritual immaturity and no growth. Saul is slacking on his duties and is avoiding the problem. Right? You army, you go over there, meet with Goliath, you talk with him. I'm going to be sipping on lemonade in my office here. How long are you going to hear this annoying big ogre say such profanities over Israel? Look at verse 16. It says 40 days. 40 days of this threat, this problem, knocking at the door. That's annoying. That's scary. See, church, procrastination is a form of unbelief. Instead of doing the right thing, you decided to delay the confrontation because you are not comfortable with how it should go. It's not on your time, so you abstain from the necessary talk. You don't have all the right words prepared, so you hold off on meeting with that person. You don't want to be made a fool or be corrected, so you hide and don't deal with the problem. It's too much work, and I don't want to go. So you don't do what God called you to do with your family. But all of that, which are excuses, makes you the one in control, not God. Well, I'll face the giant whenever I guess I have the courage. I'll deal with it when I guess I'm ready. When God says, no, the Philistine's at your door. You're the king. Face them now. What are you doing? See, procrastination is the lack of faith. That's what it reveals of who you are as a Christian. So don't wait. Do what God has called you to do, no matter how scary it is. This is another area Saul fails at, and I think we do too. Procrastination is not laziness. It's a behavior caused by stress in our lives or unfounded negative beliefs we have about ourselves. There's no need to procrastinate when Jesus calls us. He says, "In me, you may have peace. In the world, you will have tribulations, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. I'm with you." So go move forward with the task. Lastly, let's not be like Saul and pass the buck. This is found in verses 31 through 37. Ultimately, Saul fails by not showing up to his role as king. If there was no soldier volunteering to defeat Goliath, it would be his job to say, fine, guys, I'll do it. I mean, how many dads out there, if there's like a burglar downstairs, do you send your five-year-old? Hey, little Jimmy, go check him out. Go on. Do you send your wife? I'm kind of sleepy. You go get the door. I heard something downstairs. Is that a gun? No, you as the man, the dude, gets up and checks what's downstairs. Oh, I'm ready. Saul, you go get the door. You're the guy. You're the dude. You're the king. If no one else wants to fight Goliath, well, that sucks for you, but it's your job to confront this giant and fight him. He says, no, let me send my five-year-old son. He sends David. He sends David, a shepherd boy. How reckless, irresponsible, cowardly Saul is. He sends a teenager to battle. Man, see what fear does? See what procrastination does? You don't think clearly. You just don't want to do what God called you to do, so you just make excuses and you send somebody else to do the job for you. This, of course, leaves room for David to step in. David enters the story due to this broken leadership structure. Saul hears about David's wild claims of fighting Goliath and puts him on. I was like, this guy is interested? Okay, go on, boy. Good luck. The Lord be with you. You catch that? He's like a really good Christian, Saul. He's like, the Lord be with you, brother. He's like, good luck. He's in the last 2 minutes with this guy. Knockout. Round one. And then Saul even suggests to David to wear his armor. Hey, I got you. I got you. Don't worry. Don't worry. Here's my sword. Here's my helmet. Here's my armor. Right behind you. Actually, I'm like a mile away in my palace. Watch the battle. But like, good luck. He gives him his armor. Now, this is where preachers usually say, don't use the armor. You have the slingshot, your five smooth stones, you're David, blah, blah, blah. But again, that's if you take the whole underdog story. We're not taking that approach this morning. We're taking the approach of, you're Saul, and guess what? The armor is not a bad thing. The armor is only bad as if you think you're David trying to be somebody else. But that's not you today. You're Saul, which means the armor's good. It fits you. It's your armor. God gave it to you. So put it on. It's good. Armor's good. Whatever God's given you, experience, pain, suffering, money, whatever, God's given that for you to face whatever giant difficulty in your life right now. Not later, not yesterday, currently. The armor was a good thing for Saul. And you are Saul. So keep your armor. Don't give it away. Armor wasn't the problem. It was him not using it and then giving it to another person. God has given you everything you need to succeed in faith. When you pass the buck, when you always like let someone else do the job that you don't want to do, there's never a time for you to win and give God glory. When you don't face the problems and challenges God brought you to, then you panic and procrastinate. You lose the chance to see God's grace in your life. You lose out on others witnessing God's power in your life. You think the army was like, oh my God, who's this little farm boy taking down this giant? They were all like mesmerized and like glorifying God. This must be the Lord. Yeah. And David was able to receive all that stuff. But guess what? It would have received the same way with Saul in a different degree, of course, but the same thing. Like, oh my God, I really didn't believe that our king could take him down, but geez Louise, Saul did it. Saul took him down. We ain't going to be slaves. But that never came to be. Never happened. Because he said, pass the buck. No, you do it. If you pass the buck, refusing to accept responsibility in your life for who you are, as a mother, wife, friend, whatever, you name it, you know what it is, then someone else will take the job for you. And God has no problem finding replacements. God has no problem. Okay, you don't want it? Here's this other guy. He'll take your place for you. But we must do the work, church, and not be afraid of the task, no matter how difficult it may be. Do the work God calls us to do, because Jesus says, he who believes in me, the works that I do, he will do also, and greater works than these. You can do the work. You can do great work for the Lord. This story is less about us trying to be like David and more about us being like Saul. The giant in your life is bigger, stronger, faster. But guess what? God is bigger, stronger, faster than your giants, and he will fight for you. No need to panic. No need to procrastinate. No need to take the pass the buck approach. Take ownership, respond, and believe. Giants are only a problem when you think they are bigger than God. I mean, that's my sermon in a nutshell. Giants are only a problem if you believe they are bigger than your God. The story of Saul and Goliath is God overcomes your giants even when we hide in the palace like Saul does. When we don't take responsibility against them and when we allow them to shame us. The story of Saul and Goliath is when we are faithless like Saul. God is faithful and fights for us even when we don't deserve it. When we are weak, hopeless, incompetent, embarrassing, and moral, God sends a David for us. A rescuer, just like he sent clothes to Adam and Eve to hide their shame in the garden. Like he sent the ark to preserve human life from the flood. Just like God sending angels to Lot to warn them of the judgment coming to Sodom and Gomorrah. Like God sent Joseph to save his people in the land of Egypt from famine. Like he sent Moses to liberate Israel from slavery. Like he sent the judges to rescue them from time of war. Like he sent the prophets to unrepented Israel being sent off to exile. Like God sends Jesus, the son of David, to save us from our sins. God sends, God sends, God sends when we don't deserve it. When we are Saul. When we fail as a church. God sends people to help us. He steps in because God's gracious and merciful. And God keeps on sending, keeps on sending. He sends David's our way. And that's the gospel good news this morning. That's why this is the greatest Sunday school story never told. We don't need underdog stories. We need this story. We realize the giants in our lives are no threat when God is on our side. There's no pressure to be like David. No imposter syndrome of faith. You just be you. The good, the bad, the ugly. No need to being an outstanding slingshot thrower. You don't need to be a musician like David. You don't need to be a poet, a leader, a giant slayer. You don't need to panic, procrastinate, or pass the buck because God will defeat the giant through you just as you are, how you are, why you are. You don't need to have David's skills. You just have to be you because God made you you. Flaws and all. You don't need a slingshot, five smooth stones, or experience herding sheep. Just be yourself. Because when this happens, then you, as Saul, can say to your giant this morning, you come against me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty.